The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
You look at these mass public shootings like we just had in Nashville. Where do they go? They go to places where there are gun-free zones and people aren't allowed to go and protect themselves. You look at all the school shootings in the United States where everybody's been wounded or killed. Every single one has been in schools that don't allow teachers and staff to carry. As you know, we've looked at all the shootings in the United States, and it's very clear that these murderers pick targets where they know victims can't defend themselves.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that statement regarding mass shootings was from John Lott Jr. from the Crime Prevention Research Center. It's good to be here with you today. You know, there was a school shooting. There was a shooting, I should say. Last week, I didn't get a chance to report on. I really have not been reporting on these a lot. I remember when Virginia Tech took place, when Columbine took place. I mean, these were, they seemed more random, didn't they? More isolated. There's been, I don't know if you heard about this, just to show you where we are with these. It used to be headline news. There's been another mass shooting today. Yeah, this time in Farmington, New Mexico. I don't have a whole lot of details about it. They're kind of sketchy, but it reportedly happened outside of a church. And there were claims that at least 50 shots were fired. 50 shots. The report I heard said that 3 people are dead and an unknown number have been injured. So please pray for their souls. If you can pray a chaplet of divine mercy or remember them in your rosary and ask Our Lady to take them to her son, that would be helpful. Did a quick search and found that according to the Gun Violence Archive that particular shooting makes for the 227th mass shooting of the year. Can you imagine that? It's May the 15th. 227 mass shooting. Now, what's a mass shooting? Okay, let's define that. You may not know this, but a mass shooting is where 4 or more people are hit by gunfire. Okay. But still, 227? That differs, just to make sure our terms are right, right? It differs from a mass killing where 4 or more people are killed. Okay, so the terms need to be clear. So USA Today says there's been, I think, 22 mass killings in the country so far this year. So these are different numbers, just to put it in perspective. But all too often, these reports, I don't know, they don't seem to impact you. You know, the shooting in Allen, Texas, where a gunman pulled up to a premium outlet shopping center, just started firing at people on the sidewalks. That might strike closer to home. The gunman killed 8 people altogether, including the Cho family. You've probably seen a lot of this. There's a lot of reporting on that. The family went to return a shirt at one of the stores. And one of the children, graduated from Ave Maria Law School in 2010, was working at the Porter Legal Group in Dallas as an immigration attorney. And William had just celebrated his 6th birthday 4 days prior, and James was 3. William was the only member of that family to survive the horrific event. Can you imagine losing your loved ones? And that happened only because that baby was only under his mother's body. That's the only reason that child survived. I don't know, it just helps get things in perspective. These incidents happen to real people with real families, and the survivors are going to be impacted for the rest of their lives. I mean, how do you get over that? You know, you talk about PTSD. Of course, the immediate response to the events is always tit for tat over gun control. We hear a lot of talk about the Second Amendment. It's interesting that even in states like Illinois and California, which have the strictest gun laws in the nation, the number of mass shootings is still the highest. I was reading a stat earlier today. I'll see if I can dig it up a little later in the show that actually talked about states that have the greatest restrictions. You know, they're the ones that are having these problems. Why? Because these events are often premeditated. They're thought out, right? They're targeted. Somebody just doesn't snap and has an AR-15 laying around, right? Quite often they plan these things out. There's manifestos that are sometimes written. So where are we? I thought we could take a look at this. Why are we seeing so many mass shootings, so many mass deaths? And what can be done? Is gun control the solution? You know, should we do something? Should we have less You know, should there be limits maybe on the amount of rounds that a weapon can fire? Should weapons be taken off the street altogether? Or is that not the problem? Does it deal with something else like the human heart, right? The rejection of God, the division that we have. I mean, there were so many different stories here, and I don't want to belabor the point too much, but you probably have heard those horrible stories. These just break my heart of a man, right, who's parked his pickup truck at a factory and saw a 55-year-old, 60-year-old man step out beside me, had a gun in his belt, and this happened right after a 63-year-old contractor. Remember that guy? Somebody tried to break into something. They turned into his driveway. Yeah, I think it was two cheerleaders. Yeah, two cheerleaders were shot at. He opened up the wrong car door in a supermarket, and there were shots fired. And you know, there's many of these types of cases. You know, there was a 65-year-old man who killed a 20-year-old woman who accidentally pulled into his upstate New York driveway. There was an 84-year-old man who fired two bullets at a 16-year-old boy who mistakenly knocked on his door. These are stories that just happened. And there was that other guy, the other story down in Florida, right, South Florida, where there was a 43-year-old man who allegedly shot a 19-year-old instant cart delivery driver, right, and his 18-year-old girlfriend who arrived at the wrong house just doing their job delivering a package. So there's a cocktail of factors in here, and we'll talk about what they are and what the solution is with Dr. Charles Nemeth. If you want to join me too, you can dial in. Feel free to do that. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. That gets you right into the conversation. Love to get your perspective. Dr. Nemeth is a professor and director of criminal justice program at Franciscan University of Steubenville, and he's authored probably over 50 books now on criminal justice and law enforcement, including Crime and Aquinas in the Courtroom. And he previously taught at the highly acclaimed John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City. And he's been a friend of this show many times. It's good to have him back. And Doctor, thank you for your time and how valuable it is. I'm grateful to talk with you again.
Well, thank you for the invitation and your survey of the tragedies that are multiplying. It really sticks darkly with you, doesn't it? It's so staggering, the amount of killings that are going on across the United States. 227, it's only May 15th. It's really, really something.
Yeah, and so, you wonder, what does that mean? I mean, are these things trending up? Did COVID play a role in all that?
I think that's an argument I hear way too often. Yeah. I get tired of hearing it.
I agree.
Think that COVID could be one of the many variables considered, but I basically, in preparation for this discussion today, I really have eight reasons why, and if you know why these shootings are rising, and if you want me to go through any of them, I'm happy to do that, and you can pepper me with questions about it.
Now, I would love to. Walk us through it, because I mean there are. The big question is, why are there so many? Is it a rise? Is this, well, first, let me start with this. Is this year any different than previous years?
It's worse. and it's getting worse. And we're becoming so jaded to this stuff. That's the sad part, the devaluation of human life.
So true.
And how people don't really get upset. And they do get upset when they lose directly. The proximity of the tragedy is what makes people upset. But the fact of the matter is these are our neighbors. These are people, as Christians, we're supposed to care about. And yet, we don't have this intensity of reaction. And there's a host of reasons why that is, too. But I'll start with number one,
please.
if you want.
Yeah, take us
number
through.
One, I think one of the main reasons for the increase is that we've mainstreamed mental illness into our culture. We have taken mental illness and acted as if there are no negative consequences that emerge from mental illness, and everyone is supposed to be treated the same, whether they're mentally ill or not. And in the same context of mental illness, we have decided to parse up or divide up or separate a person who's mentally ill from a person who's a criminal. Well, that's almost farcical, because the majority of people who are in our American prison system who are still there, many of them suffer from some type of diagnosable mental illness. But this does not make them non-criminals.
Right.
But in the modern world, we've had this tendency of showing that mental illness is merely a pathological or, you know, some type of medical condition that is treatable with medications or psychiatric assistance. And I think this is a grave, grave mistake to have essentially decriminalized all facets of mental illness. And I'm not saying that all mentally ill people are criminals. That's not what I'm intimating. I'm simply saying that if you look at the one constant that is true amongst most mass murderers, they have a pathology to them, which can be traceable and trackable over their lifetime. So I think this decision, especially by academic elites, to parse up the man or woman from their mental illness and designate them non-criminals has been devastating to our system, because that's the one constant you see in nearly all these cases. These people suffer from some type of emotional, cognitive, neurological, some type of psychological or psychiatric disturbance. So that's reason number one.
Yeah, and that's fascinating. Just so I can follow up, and we'll take a few calls for you too. If you want to get in, 888-914-9149, you can join the conversation. I just finished talking about mental health, and we were talking depression and anxiety, and there's been a documented increase in that amongst U.S. adults and adolescents as well. I think the number of adolescents now, 41% of them are on antidepressants. I mean, we're talking teenagers. And since the pandemic hit, those numbers were even higher. You see a correlation then with the increase in these shootings and mental health then? So we're seeing anxiety, depression, and other mental health.
Well, my list of psychiatric, diagnostic terms is much larger than that.
Yeah.
I mean, we actually have psychotics and people that are catatonically, unbalanced out on the street, because we've shut most of the mental hospitals down. We don't engage in any type of civil commitment anymore the way we used to. I mean, there were usually two distinct systems that operated through most of my life as a lawyer. One was the criminal justice system, and the other was the civil commitment system, which had the same impact or same effect, because you put dangerous people, for whatever reasons their dangerousness emerges, into a facility that was locked down and you couldn't let them on the street. But all you have to do is visit the subways in New York City, you'll be treated with all types of people that used to be in mental facilities less than 20 years ago. But they're not. They don't place them. They consider this to be a harsh treatment for somebody with psychiatric or psychological problems. So I do see a correlation between those two things.
All right, give me another point here, too. We'll go through some of your points.
I
want to grab a few more calls. There's a lot of people want to join you, but I find it interesting. We could talk a long time on point number one. I think it's
a big
driver.
Every one of these could be filled with discussion. Well, the second obviously is the police defunding movement. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is just simply plain logic. You go to Seattle or Portland or Philadelphia or Washington, D.C. or New York City. New York City's down 6,000 officers now. And anytime you have that type of movement that's grabbed on hold of a whole slew of Americans, and particularly our legislators who actually believe that this is better to defund police and replace police with social workers and other human services officers, agents, this is bound to allow the barbarians to roam more free. It's bound to permit, crime to rise, because that preventive deterrent presence that policing provides is disappearing. I remember when I first took my job at John Jay about 13 years ago, I remember the one thing I was struck by in New York City was, number one, how safe it was. Okay, but I also was struck by, there was a policeman on every corner, or woman. There were police everywhere, all over the place. And I always said to myself, this is a necessity. And that's why their crime rates were so low.
Yeah.
And then coupled with that, and this will be number three, is that there's been this new perception that emerges in all types of constituencies, groups, academics, that police are an occupying army rather than being defenders of your own safety. And police are not occupying armies. Go to any dangerous high crime community and ask the people who live there whether they think the police, for the most part, are an occupying army, and they'll tell you otherwise.
Yeah, I saw a stat earlier today, Doctor, that talked about Baltimore, Chicago, New York, L.A. These were all big blue states that wanted to defund police, and they took hundreds of millions of dollars out of budgets. We saw mass retirements and resignations follow. Now they're putting millions of dollars back, not quite the same level of contribution, but they're realizing defunding your police, you're seeing an increase in crime. And, of course, you got some liberal prosecutors too.
Yeah, some of them are seeing it, but they're not really seeing it in the same passionate way that you and I might see it. I mean, let's face it, New York City cut the NYPD budget by $1 billion in 1 year.
That's a lot.
And then they sit there and they scratch their heads and go, why is there so much crime?
No kidding. All right, we'll see this. We'll grab a couple calls. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149. Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. Andrew wants to join us. He's got a comment for you. Andrew, hi. You're on the air with Dr. Nemeth.
Hi, Doctor. Hi, Drew. It's a quick comment. It's coming from a military family and a law enforcement family and a Catholic family. The gun and violence debate, it has got nothing to do with politics. Satan is the master of disorder, and the whole entire concept boiling down to removing guns from law-abiding citizens' hands will somehow curb gun violence or violence in general is absurd. It plays right into Satan's disorder plans to try to get what law-abiding citizens to be unable to protect themselves. So we gotta stop playing into that whole thing. That's my whole comment on it.
All right. Well, thank you for that. Doctor, let's talk about the spiritual component to this.
Well, that was number eight on my list, and that was the triumph of secularism.
Yeah.
And when secularism wins out, which is doing so literally everywhere, except once in a while we'll see a case or two out of the Supreme Court which tries to restore it, there is no real moral quandaries in a lot of the people who commit these acts. They're not operating with a moral compass. They're operating with something completely different. And when you grow up in a godless series of school systems, when you don't have a family that implants religious and moral principles into your mind, no matter what the religion is. It's one of the reasons why Orthodox Jews and Roman Catholics have very low crime rates. Why strict Muslims have very low crime rates, because they believe in things, and that's gone. For not everybody, not for me for sure,
wow,
and not for my students here at Franciscan, who I'm reminding and constantly telling, it's you that'll go into the world and bring these things back.
Yeah.
Because at present, religion is an afterthought for the most part. So, so secularism has definitely triumphed in the criminal justice model, that is for sure. And the irony of it is that the only successful programs in criminal justice are always faith-based. If you go into the prisons or you go into juvenile facilities, it's the ones that discover God where the people change their patterns of human life. Wow. Nothing else about self-esteem is going to work.
I'm fascinated by that. You're saying Muslims and Catholics and Christians, people who have a belief system, the level of this, the gun violence is far lower?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, look at the Mormons. How many violent crimes do Mormons calculate?
Or the Amish,
very little. The Amish have very little crime.
Right,
extremely.
Exactly.
So if you go back in any strong religious group, you're going to find that there's a reason why they don't commit crime, because of their the peril of their soul. But, you know, do you think that Koberger worries about the peril of his soul, or, the person who kills for no reason 17 people in a mall? I mean, what are they? They're certainly not thinking of God.
Yeah, no kidding. My guest today, Dr. Charles Nemeth, we're taking a look at not just gun violence, but the rise in shootings, mass shootings. Why we're seeing this? What's driving it? Why are neighbors now turning on neighbors? Why are people so quick to open fire? Elizabeth is in Phoenix, Arizona. She'd love to talk with you, Doctor. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Doctor.
Hello, Elizabeth.
Very brief question. NRA, National Rifle Association, here in Arizona, is very strong. So have they published at all, or do you know what their position is regarding the cause a reason, et cetera, or prevention of these mass killings in the United States?
I have not seen any particular research documents come out of the NRA. I would say that the NRA is an organization that I generally like, but there are times in which the NRA is too myopically concerned about the Second Amendment, and they don't see the value. There is some value in restriction. It depends on what the restriction is. And that was my, Elizabeth, you bring me to my item number six.
I love it.
That gun, the futility of gun control, it's hopeless for bad people. They don't care what the gun controls are. However, we as a society, we have to come up with some mechanism for controlling people who are mentally disturbed from getting these weapons. I mean, let's face it, the Nashville shooter, she was under severe psychiatric and psychological counseling for quite a few years, the one who walked in there and killed those children. This was in the record, but HIPAA laws make it impossible for us to screen people that have these type of checkered backgrounds. I'm not in favor of many restrictions on guns, but one place I am concerned, and one of the reasons why I think that so much of these more of these mass shootings are occurring, is that mentally ill, mentally disturbed people have easy access to weapons when they should not.
Let me ask you about that, and we'll follow up. And if you're on hold, I'll get you on the air. If you want to join us, it's 888-914-9149. I was reading a study earlier today. There was a paper that was published, and it says what they found was states that have permit-to-purchase laws, which is essentially a much more thorough background check than what the FBI requires, they have significantly lower rates of occurrences of mass shootings. And then they went on to say, speaking about, well, how can we lower these shootings? States that have bans on large capacity magazines, they also have fewer casualties, both in deaths and injuries when there's a mass shooting. So those two approaches seem to have an impact on the incidents.
Well, New York has a magazine limitation, and it really doesn't work there at all.
It's fascinating. So what do you make of that? I mean, should we limit magazines and the amount of bullets or no?
That's not the issue. The issue is not the gun, as if it's some self-autonomous being that goes around shooting at people. This is what you often hear in the critics of gun ownership, that the guns are always the problem. I don't see the amount of rounds as ever being a major problem. What I do find, again, is this constant variable in gun mass shootings, and it's always mental health, always. And that's where the restriction should lie. And yet, the Christian school shooter, she bought 7 guns legally with a background that was that psychiatric. And that, to me, is something that people, they don't like hearing it, particularly the more rabid Second Amendment people. I get it. I'm very Second Amendment oriented, but I'm not Second Amendment oriented for crazy people. I'm just not. And then the other case, which I was involved in at John Jay, we were security consultants to the school district up in Connecticut in Sandy Hook. That mother knew how crazy her son was, who went into that school and killed all those people. He had a severe long-term psychiatric problem, and yet she had weapons in the house. These are the preventable things.
Yeah.
These are things that something could be done about. But rounds and what type of weapon you have, you know, it makes no difference, because in the end, bad people always get weapons.
Yeah. And my guest today, Dr. Charles Nemeth. If you want to join us, I'll grab your calls. Armando in L.A. has got an interesting comment. He worked with juveniles in probation for 28 years. When we come back, we'll get his call. What's driving the mass shootings? You have an idea, a theory? What do we do with guns? Some people are saying we need to have stricter gun control, stricter gun laws. Other people say it's not guns that kill people, it's people. Exploring what has been a very divisive topic. And we'll dive into it deeper when I return.
All the news and issues
now
that are happening now.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, it's great to be here with you today. Thank you for joining me. Why are mass shootings on the rise this year? If you feel like mass shootings are happening more often, well, that's because they are. No doubt about it. It's not a laughing matter either. The pace of mass killings so far in 2023 has broken records compared to previous years. And we are seeing right now an average of about one per week. Yeah, well, the pace compared to past years, mass shootings still account for, they say, a relatively small percentage of gun deaths in the U.S. I'm joined today by Dr. Charles Nemeth, and we're exploring this. I think it's a really important question. Is it secularism? Is it lack of God? Is it mental illness? Is it depression? What is it that's driving people? Why are Americans shooting strangers and neighbors, people knocking on their door or pulling in their driveway? A question that has, I know, a lot of people perplexed, and the reaction to it always is, well, we need to get guns off the street. That will resolve this. Doctor, we'll jump right into the phones, grab a few more calls. I want to get through a few more of your points. If you want to join us, you can pull up a chair here and be part of the conversation at 888-914-9149. Armando is listening in Los Angeles, California, and he's got a perspective to share with you. Hi, Armando.
Hi, how you doing? Thank you for taking my call, and may the blessings of God be with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, I've been with the probation department for 28 years. And back when I started, we used to have about 80 kids. And out of the 80 kids, maybe once in a while, you'd get one kid that was struggling with the mental health issue. Now, you can have 80 kids. And out of those 80 kids, you'd probably have about 70 of those kids are going to be on some type of a mental health or suicide watch. Wow. All these kids nowadays are struggling with mental health issues.
Wow. Armando, that's not a surprising story, but it's a very distressing one. It's one of the reasons why I wrote my book on happiness for young people, wow. Rules from Aquinas and Aristotle. I just wrote it last year. And it's because I understand this distress you're talking about, how many young people are just, they're rudderless. They don't have any moral compass, not because it's their fault inherently, but because they've grown up in a world in which there is no moral truth or moral center to anything. But that is a very disturbing, but not an uncommon story.
What was the title of that book, Doctor?
It's called Happiness in a Complex World.
Happiness.
Rules from Aristotle and Aquinas. It's published by Sophia Institute Press.
We have to talk about that. That's a great conversation for another day here too. Because
I'm happy to do. I've been on about 50 shows about it.
You know, I scratch my head all the time, and I see, you know, if we dealt with a little bit of it earlier today, just depression and anxiety amongst the youth. I mean, it's skyrocketing as well.
And that's one of the reasons why here. When I walk into Franciscan every day and I meet these students and I see the optimism and the gleam and the hope in their eyes, it's very moving, because everywhere else I've ever been, it's not been like that. It's been descending downwards into a sadness that I see everywhere and every other place I've ever worked, but here.
Oh, that's awesome. What an endorsement. All right, our next call comes from the beautiful state of Maine. Phil, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hey.
Hello.
Hello, hello. I'm going outdoors. It's the only place I got.
All right. Go right ahead with your comments as soon as you can, Phil. Thank you, sir.
Go ahead. I can't.
Hey, Phil, you with us?
I got you. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah,
okay?
Please. Yeah, go right ahead if you
can. We hear you. Yeah.
Okay, so my comment was, when I talked to young Thomas, who I get a kick out of,
yeah.
I said what's happening is these kids are being fed through the video games they play and the movies they watch that deteriorate. Just killing a person means nothing. And therefore, there's no value for life. And we all know this. I've heard you say it on the show tonight. Criminals will always have guns. Eliminating guns will not make a difference in this world.
Well, Phil, thank you for your call. I want to follow up because I think you bring up an interesting point here. Video games, violence that we see in them, Doctor, the movies that we see. And the other aspect that he hit on, I think, is so critical. We have lost respect for the dignity of the human person. You know, we have enabled the destruction of how many tens of millions of children in the womb. So we are in a culture of death. Is it a surprise that we see this manifest in our youth and with these shootings?
No. And in fact, the art that he's speaking of, and he did a very fine job explaining it, is the reflection of the culture. I mean, art is always a mirror of the culture, and what art, alleged art, we have coursing through our daily lives is not really art at all. It's ugliness. And our kids are our young people today are really being mismanaged in terms of the values, the virtues they're being trained in, having any understanding of truth whatsoever. It's very difficult. I often think to myself, how could I survive if I had no truth at all? Yeah. But yet these people are living like this day to day.
Yeah, it's so true. Hey, Phil, thank you for your comments. I'm grateful for your call. And for anyone who wants to know who Young Thomas is, you might have heard him mention that. He's our call screener. He goes by Young Thomas. At least that's what we call him here. His name's Tom, but he's Young Thomas. Bridget in Arlington, Texas. You're on the air with Dr. Nemeth. Welcome.
Okay. Oh, hi. Thanks a lot. Hey, I love your show.
Thanks.
And Doctor with the book there. Okay. My opinion is this, okay? I was, you know, born in the Northeast, you know, Cleveland, Ohio, but I've been down in Texas 40 years and probably five in Columbus. Now, this is, my children are 40 and 38. My granddaughter's 14. This shootings in the schools is, you know, gone on since my children were in school. This is my solution. Education, okay? There's a gun book, Law, Texas Gun Laws. It's a big one. It's revised. You know, if a child had education in that, because I did, at 8 years old, my uncle was a police officer, and, you know, I learned about not touching a gun. When we played outside, we weren't allowed to point the gun except if it was a squirt gun or something, right from an early age. And you instill these things that were instilled, you know, up until the time where everybody got mothers working, you know, all this in no time. And now, if they had education of that book, a child, no matter how old, a boy especially, would think twice about shooting a gun, because even if he was right in protecting somebody, he might go to jail. Right. He might serve a trial. Yeah. So you don't shoot the gun except for last choice.
Okay.
You know, to defend yourself.
But that's an excellent point, Bridget. But I would also add to that that these people, if they weren't using guns, they'd be using baseball bats. They'd be using sledgehammers.
That's the problem.
They're so morally bankrupt, and they're so vacuous. Anybody who works with young people, like Armando was talking about earlier, he sees this blankness, this complete vacuum of morality in these people. And you know, take the gun away, they'll find another way of torturing or hurting somebody. And, you know, I'm not saying that you shouldn't have training in guns, because I certainly, and respect for guns, I agree with that 100%.
Hey, Bridget, thank you for the call. I appreciate your patience and your contribution. Jim's in Columbus, Ohio. Jim, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Drew. Hello, Dr. Nemeth.
Hello, John. How are you?
Enjoyed your comments. I think from listening to what you said, I really think it's your eighth point, which you kind of actually mentioned before you started, that we've really lost our way and we've turned away as a society from God. I think if you really look at the points you brought up so far, most of them can be summed up, and the root cause is that we've turned away from God. The mental illness, the normalization of mental illness is also part of that. Drew, you kind of mentioned it, that we don't have a respect for human life. We have how many abortions, and yet we can't even decide when life begins as a society. And so until we fix that, until we turn back to God, I think all these other things are just a symptom of that. And now it's resulting in mass killings. But I think your eighth point really should be your first point. I think if we could fix that, the other things would take care of themselves.
Well,
I was trying to end off on my best point. But you raise a really a great series of comments, because a lot of these things are Band-Aids if you don't fix the fundamental issue, and that is a godless society.
That's so true. Hey, Jim, thank you. Great contribution. Let me do this, too. I want to go through a few more of your points, and I know Nick and Ed and Fran, everyone on hold, we're going to get all your calls. If you want to join us, too, my guest today is Dr. Charles Nemeth. We're taking a look at the rise in shootings today in our culture, what's driving it, and what can be done, what's behind it. The number to get in, 888-914-9149. Feel free to share your views, 888-914-9149. You know, Doctor, so often we hear people saying, hey, we need to get guns off the street. If we didn't have them, that'd be the case. I think in New Zealand, after their mass shooting, I think they did that. I don't know whether that affected things or not. But let's go through a few more of your points. What are the other drivers in terms of what we're seeing?
Well, the system itself is often its own worst enemy. We're seeing tremendous evidence of this. Just recently, with the Jordan Neely case in New York City, where an individual who isn't Michael Jackson, and he's not a Michael Jackson impersonator,
yeah, right,
in between his 44 arrests and his multiple violent crimes that he committed, this is an individual who's walking free. He's always out under the cashless bail theory of New York State. He's always put on probation. If he is ever locked up, he's always being released early.
Right.
Those three things alone allow these career criminals to just repeatedly do the things they do.
And Doctor, let me hold you on that point for just a second for people who don't know who that is. He's the man on the New York, I think, subway who was put in a chokehold by a Marine and he lost his life. That's the gentleman you're referring to?
Yeah, Daniel Penny is the Marine who put him in a chokehold. And the guy's name was Jordan Neely, right?
Yeah.
So, and again, as anybody who rides the subways, I rode them for many years. They're becoming dangerous now.
Yeah, they are.
And so people are very concerned. So, but all three of these things, like cashless bail, all lead to another argument, and that is there's no consequences for anything. And when you lose Aristotelian, I call it the Aristotelian equilibrium, when you lose the ability to match criminal conduct with consequences, that's what Aristotle so brilliantly did in his commutative justice theory, that for Act A, Act B must match it. And when you don't match it, the equilibrium starts to corrode and the society starts to corrode. And that was how this nation was built. It was built on an Aristotelian model of corrective justice. When you did this, you got this. This is the way it is. And when it's out of balance, what happens is that crime just accelerates. And we're seeing that everywhere now. How could you be arrested 44 times and still be walking the streets? Does anybody really believe that's possible? Well, there are thousands of people like this in New York walking around, because that brings us to the abolish prison movement. This is another reason. New York City is emptying its jails. Jails all over the United States are being closed. They're being turned into minimum security rather than maximum security. And all of these things destroy consequence as well, and they also make it unsafe because some people belong in jail for long periods of time.
Well, great points. My guest, Dr. Charles Nemeth, we'll go back to the phones, take a few more of your calls. Ed in South Jersey, good afternoon. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. When I was growing up, I grew up in the 50s, and public schools had prayer going on. My brother and me and all of us, during hunting seasons, we would get on the school bus with our shotguns, and then we would walk home through the woods, you know, just having a good old time. But when we got to school, the teacher would say, put those guns back in the cloakroom and sit down and shut up. But they were, we all had guns as kids, you know, shotguns, of course.
Sure.
But nobody shot anybody, but we did sit down and pray in school, in public school. So all of this really could be fixed by bringing school prayer back. That's all I can say.
All right. Well, Nick, thank you. A very different time, huh, Doctor?
Oh, no question about it. And with the case of Madeleine Murrow O'Hare, we, of course, eliminated prayer from our schools. And that was one of the worst decisions of the U.S. Supreme Court, where it created this mindset that you, if you ever prayed, you were establishing a religion, but you weren't. You were simply expressing your religion. And free expression is protected under the First Amendment of the United States Constitution. But our liberal court justices long lost that distinction.
She ended up dying a weird death, didn't she? Was she assassinated? Was she killed?
I don't know. It's an interesting question. I know her son has spent his entire life discrediting her.
Wow.
I mean, essentially saying what she did was wrong to our society. But, you know, she was just the front piece. There were tons of other people behind it. And we've been moving down this path way, way, way too long. I just wrote something on the issue of the Supreme Court and religious expression. There's been five or six cases in the last couple years which are trying to restore this. It's very difficult to do it, but we're on the winning side more often than not anymore. And it may be, it may be that prayer does return to our schools. I don't think it's going to fix anything overnight, but over time, at least allows people to think metaphysically, to think of the transcendent. This is what these people never think about. They don't think it. All they think about is the here and the now. What can I get?
Well, Doctor, I have to take a short pause. When we come back, we'll go back to the phones, take a few more calls as we continue to take a look at why our mass shootings on the rise and what is driving it. As for Madeline O'Hare, she, John, and Robin were kidnapped. I just did a quick search here. And apparently they were held for ransom by their kidnappers. Their bodies were so mutilated, they were actually killed. So she did die a gruesome death.
I did not know that.
Yeah, no. The corpses were found burned and stacked on top of one another, legs removed. I won't get into all the details. Pretty gruesome death. Tragic death. So somebody should say a prayer for her soul. Our conversation will continue when we come back. Final segment of the Drew Mariani Show today. I get the privilege of sharing it with Dr. Charles Nemeth, author of over 50 books. We're taking a look at some of the violence we're seeing in the culture and what's driving it. That conversation continues right after this.
Insight and analysis right here. It's the Drew Mariani Show. Relevant Radio. All the issues, one place.
One place.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thank you for being with me here today. It is great. Just a very quick programming note, because I know time's going to fly here. I just want to let everyone who was listening to me on Friday know what happened. We had our spring pledge drive, and that's so critical for getting Relevant Radio to the finish line. You know, getting what we generate in those pledge drives get us from quarter to quarter, and the summer months can be tough months. When I signed off the air on Thursday night, I was not sure we were going to make it to goal. We had over $1 million to get, and I'm thinking, wow, we need some heroic giving in a day. And my mind was blown. I always marvel at the generosity of people who value their faith and who understand the importance of Catholic evangelization in the country. We need well-formed men and women, and great institutions like Franciscan do that. Dr. Charles Nemeth joins me from there. And apostles like Relevant Radio that give to you. We give platform to men like Dr. Nemeth and so many others. Really shine a light on what's happening in the culture, whether we're talking gun violence or mental health, or whether we're dealing with immigration at the border, or whether it's finance or politics. You know, having a perspective that comes from a well-formed position, that based on the teachings of our faith, it transforms the dialogue and the conversation. And I just think that is really incredible, and that's what Relevant does. When we signed off, I was trying to get to goal. We were about $8,000 short when I wrapped up on Friday. You might have been listening then. During the minutes that followed, final poll tallies, right? We crossed the threshold, and we made it over the $3 million mark. So I just want to say thank you on behalf of my colleagues and all the souls that will be reached in the days ahead because Relevant Radio is on the air. We are deeply grateful. And we are good stewards of all that you give. And I know God's going to use it in a really powerful way. So my gratitude to you. Over the weekend, donations continue to come in. And it's still not too late. You might have been away last week and you say, hey, I want to help you guys. RelevantRadio.com, the mobile app, you can still do it. Or you can call 877-291-0123. But we are back to programming. And I'm grateful for it. And what you're going to see in the days ahead will be good. You're going to see information. You're going to see lives being changed. And you have a platform that you can join me on, and feel free to do that. Dr. Nemeth, thank you for your time today. I'm grateful for what you do. Before we jump to Diana and everyone else on hold, your institution, Franciscan's another one that forms future generations with a good, clear way of thinking and with good hearts. If people want more information, I know you head up with the Criminal Justice Department there.
Yes, I founded the Criminal Justice Department here 2 years ago, and it's a program that is highly comprehensive, but it's also grounded in the natural law and Catholic tradition theories. So students here are continuously, no matter what course they're taking, are exposed to those two traditions. And that makes us highly unique. Yep. And why we're sending out people who are becoming leaders and will become great leaders in the justice model. We also have a new master's degree that's coming. It'll start in the spring of 2024. It'll be 100% online. Wow. That program also is rooted in natural law reasoning. And all of the students who are in that program are exposed to a mighty dose of St. Thomas, St. Augustine, cool. And all the great. And all the great pagan thinkers like Aristotle and Cicero, and it's amazing to me that pagan societies under Cicero and Aristotle were quite enviable as well in terms of the morality of them. So.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, well, let's grab a few calls. We have a few minutes left. Diana's been waiting for a while in Boston. Hi, Diana. Thanks for, or Diane. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Drew. Nice to speak to you. Thank you for taking my call. I have a comment. Is that I'm in full support of our Second Amendment rights because I totally believe that people kill people with guns. Guns don't kill people. You know, you need someone to pull the trigger. So it's not taking away the guns that's going to work. It's trying to address the root problem of why that person is pulling the trigger. People that, law-abiding citizens, I believe, should have the right to defend their homes, their right. property and whatnot, right. themselves. And the other thing is, I believe it's a multifaceted issue that we're dealing with these mass shootings. Personally speaking, I think, like you callers are mentioning, having God pulled out, I think, of the society and schools is a huge problem. I think that our gut health is, in some people's, is an issue because I read 97% of chronic ailments stem from our gut. Huge connection between a brain and the gut. There's books on it, the brain and things like that. Yep. And between all, there's like, I think they get like something like 70 something, like even just vaccinations now, and that can affect their gut.
Diane, it's interesting. I'm going to let the doctor respond to you. Just on your point there, I had a doctor, Sean O'Mara, is a physician who's been on, and he's big on the microbiome. He actually says that, believe it or not, there's a common denominator with a lot of these serial killers and something that was going on in their gut biome as well. It affects depression and all sorts of things. Doctor, I'll respond to her. She says, hey, guns don't kill people. Kill people.
I mean, I have no objection with that, Diane, except that people who have severe mental illness are more than likely, if they get possession of a gun, to kill people. Otherwise, if you took a look at the profile, if you did the demographic analysis of all the mass shooters, let's say just of this year, the 227 of them, you would find that mental illness courses in and out of nearly every one of them. And so I'm not in favor of any severe restrictions on guns at all. I am a Second Amendment person too. But when it comes to mental illness, we have to have a screening mechanism. Because there are so many types of mental illness, too. And, some are more violent than others. Some are more unpredictable than others. But I think that the woman in Nashville would not have committed this if her background had been checked on a screening by the FBI.
So I'm curious with your criminology courses there.
We don't have any criminology because that's the theory of crime. We're more interested in the operation, the application of criminal justice as a system.
Part of
the problem is that the criminologists are running the show.
Interesting. when it comes to your Catholic university, when it comes to teaching the faith on this, I mean, we have a legitimate right to self-defense, right? That's one of the arguments for that, for being able to have a weapon in a Second Amendment. Has the church spoken at all? I mean, where's our nation's bishops when it comes to the gun problem? I don't even want to say gun problem because it's not, got to be careful how I phrase that. You know, this gun debate in our country, where are they and how does the light of our faith, illuminate this?
Well, I myself just rely on the documents of the church, such as Fides Oratio, Veritatis Splendor, where the right of self-defense is reaffirmed, both in the state as well as the individual, and one can read Aquinas's very, very erudite discourse on the nature of self-defense and his analysis of murder. I mean, these things have long been part of Catholic tradition. There's nothing here that's being invented under the sun. And I recently had the third edition of my criminal law book come out, and it's called Historical, Moral and Ethical Traditions. And that's how that criminal law book has been written. And all our students are exposed not only to what the definition of a crime is, but where did it come from? Why is it wrong? These are the questions that no one asks anymore. They don't really get into the issue of why something's moral or immoral or ethical or not ethical. So, and I think that's one of the great tragedies of higher ed is they've essentially purged any of that type of analysis and become neutral about anything that's moral. So I think if you could give me any criminal justice topic And I could show you 100 places where the Catholic Church agrees with the longstanding traditions of self-defense or any other topic you would put on the table.
Well, Doctor, I'm very grateful for you. I love what you had to say. Patrick, do I have time for another call or am I out of time? No, I only have about 90 seconds. He's telling me in my headset. So, Doctor, my apologies to everybody on hold. We will revisit this issue again. I know it's not going to go anywhere. Doctor, final thoughts from you, and I'll give you the final 60.
Yeah, I just want to make sure I got my eight in. My last one's very simple. Yep. It's part of the reason these things are happening is because our federal agencies like the FBI have been dropping the ball on people they have under surveillance. And that's another one of those variables that keeps cropping up. Right. They knew about the person. They were aware of the person. And they did nothing about the person.
Well, Doctor, thank you. I appreciate you being here. We look forward to talking again. That's Dr. Charles Nemeth, Professor and Director of Criminal Justice Program at Franciscan University of Steubenville, the author of over 50 books. You can check him out. I am out of time for the day. I want to thank not just the doctor, but you for allowing me to be part of your afternoon. We'll be back again tomorrow at the same time. If you're new to the program, set your radio, okay, set your dial. If you found us on the app, on every day, a great programming from early in the morning to late night. Cal Clark is coming right up. Until tomorrow, remember, God loves you, and so do I. Have a wonderful, wonderful day.